Good morning. Thank you so much, Paula. I waited like 15 seconds so that you could get to the end of your question.
Thank you. I knew you were waiting. I was looking at my clock.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 84 of Coffee with the Coder. We're delighted to have you joining us today, and we can't wait to get into the questions. We just had an amazing little bit of what we call the education in our insider portion for the last 10 minutes. So if you're dialing in at 10:10 for the live call and you want to hear more, you can call in at 10 o'clock Eastern time. And there's always a wonderful topic going on that Paula and her team will share with us. So today with coronavirus. And the only way to get the replay of that is to be an insider. So let me tell you how to do that before I jump into the questions. You can join us on our Facebook Insider Coffee with the Coder group. It's a private group, and you can get the replay there. You can join us on LinkedIn in the newly established Coffee with the Coder Network. And you can just reach out to us with your mugshot. So Christine will handle all of that. You can reply to any communication that you receive from aq-iq.com and ask for more details, and we'll be happy to do that for you. So those of you who are also dialing in at 1010, and you might not already know that there is a text opportunity available to remind you when to come to Coffee with the Coder, because it's not every Monday, it's every other Monday at 1010 Eastern. So if you'd like to get on the text list, you can reach out to us, help@aq-iq.com, or reply to anything you receive from us, and we'll get that to the right person so that you can and be notified in the hour prior to the start. So anyway, good morning again, Paula. Are you ready for questions?
Absolutely. Let's go.
All righty. So this first one is anonymous, and it's an outpatient question. You said for me not to start there. I'm sorry. I'll skip to the next one. First one is going to be for inpatient, and it's from our friend Linda. And Linda says, I would like to know when coding pregnancy charts, what is the present on admission indicator for a pregnant female with a loose nuchal cord? Our facility is using W, clinically undetermined. I just want to be sure you're correct.
Okay, awesome. Well, I'm going to take a minute to do a little education on this question, too. So a nuchal cord, for those of you who might not be familiar, is when the cord is wrapped around the baby's neck. Apparently, it's common, and it may not always cause problems. You know, actually, I think I was in the room with my daughter when she had her baby, so my grandbaby, and the cord was there, but the doctor, you know, moved it, and everything was fine. Estimates are about 20 to 30% of all pregnancies involve a nuchal cord, and it's typically caused by the fetal movement. It can become dangerous, which is less common, when it's wrapped around the neck or another body part where the blood flow is decreased during a contraction, causing the baby's heart rate to drop. And it can actually go on to cause fetal demise if there could be challenges with it. So anyway, it could be a big deal. So the AHA coding handbook states for obstetric patients, whether or not delivery occurs during the current hospitalization does not affect assignment of the POA indicator, and that's present on admission indicator. The determining factor for POA assignment is whether the pregnancy complication or obstetric condition described by the code is present at the time of admission. And so there's the question, you know, is this present at the time of admission or not? You know, if the doctor doesn't say, or if the doctor, you know, that's where we're kind of questioning that the physician says, you know, nuchal cord, but then he or she doesn't say if it was present at the time of admission. Now, let me just give you a sidebar here, is that newborns, you know, if you're coding for the baby's chart, are not considered to be admitted until after birth. So therefore, any condition that is present at birth or develops in utero is considered to be present at admission. So also for those of you who may not be familiar with the POA indicators, the indicators are Y for yes, it was present at the time of admission, N for no, not present at the time of admission, U for unknown, that means documentation is insufficient to determine if the condition is present at the time of admission, and W, which is stated as being assigned, was clinically undetermined. The provider is unable to clinically determine whether the condition was present at admission or not. Because, you know, that baby could move. I mean, it could be there or it could not. And then unreported, there are a group of exempt codes from POA reporting, but unfortunately this code is not. Now, under the, we went out and did some research, and there's a few questions out on the internet, which I'm sure were done also, but I just want to come out for you guys who didn't do the research, is that, you know, under the IC9 world, there were examples of POA indicators in our guidelines to how to report nuchal cords, but under ICD-10, that was removed. Now, so I certainly, you know, it seems reasonable to report the W, but however, I'm going to have to go back and say the underlying factor should be based on the physician's documentation. So we can't say that 100% of the time it will be clinically undetermined. Now, after reviewing the physician's documentation, of course, you got to make that choice, and it could be any of the POAs. And we realize that many physicians do not provide the necessary information on the diagnosis. And to go further, it's not typical that we're going to query in every situation. So we heavily recommend looking at the documentation and coding accordingly and not just assigning a W clinically undetermined in every case. There's going to be a bit of physician education that is required with your physicians to, you know, get them to identify, you know, what the status is. And then if it is unknown, you can also be used. So that said, just wanted to bring that up, and just, you're going to have to look at the documentation. We can't say you have to use, you know, that you use W every single time. So thank you.
Thank you very much. That was very helpful. Okay, so now we have another one from Jody, and Jody works in an inpatient rehab. She's giving us this scenario. The patient is accepted at acute inpatient rehab facility, and the pre-screen, the PAS, indicates an IGC of 16, etiology diverticulitis. The patient had open surgery, colectomy, and now has a colostomy. Post-surgical complications include acute respiratory failure requiring intubation for several days, an abdominal wound infection with washout and wound back. Patient is admitted to IRF for weakness. The patient arrives at IRF with O2, with a wound back, and a JP drain. They will require wound care, dietary restrictions, colostomy education, in addition to the OT and PT. So in the PAPE, the rehab doctor diagnoses the etiology as critical illness myopathy with proximal weakness and states that no significant discrepancy with the pre-screen. Based on the definition of etiology, the etiologic problem that led to the impairment for which the patient is receiving rehab, is it acceptable to change the IGC to 03.8? Or should the IGC remain 16 with critical illness myopathy recorded as a comorbid condition that will make the case CMS 13 compliant? If this kind of IGC change is acceptable, should the rehab doctor state in the pre-screen acknowledgement on the PAPE that they disagree with the IGC and etiology? If it is not acceptable, there are other examples where the patient has cellulitis, UTI, acute respiratory failure without COPD, and would those be acceptable to change from 16 to 3.8 for critical illness myopathy? That's a little involved.
Okay. Yeah, that's an involved question. So, and of course, every case is going to be based on that documentation for that case. So first of all, this question is a little challenging because we're not seeing that documentation. That said, in the scenario, even though it states the documentation appears to agree with the pre-admission screen, it appears to us that the physician may be stating something a little different in the post-admission physician evaluation. That's the PAPE that Pam was talking about, PAPE. Now, so I'm going, is that correct? So it sounds like the doc, and this happens commonly, where the pre-screen is filled out and the physician, in some situations, the physician is actually documenting on that pre-screen agreement with the pre-screen, right? And in other situations, the physician is doing a completely different document in addition to the PAPE, saying they agree or disagree with what's in the pre-admission screen and signing off on it, because the physician, you know, that's a requirement that he or she documents. And yes, best practice would be that the physician identify in the pre-screen that he or she feels that the IGC should be 3.8, or that the patient's diagnosis for admission and or I should say diagnosis for admission is critical illness myopathy. That's huge. It sounded like the definition of critical illness myopathy, and again, I'm not looking at the whole chart, but based on some of the things that were stated in the question, that patient probably met that litmus test of yes, you know, I can prove that the severity of illness showed that there was a true critical illness myopathy with proximal weakness rather than distal and some other things, you know, looking at the history of the patient. So that said, we want the physician to state as clearly as possible in or around the pre-screen, and then in the post-admission physician evaluation, providing the correct information as well. Now, so the post-admission physician evaluation, the reason for it is to validate or revise statements made in the pre-admission screen. So, according to a CMS IRF call and clarification document, a question posed and clarified by CMS was this: clarification on whether the diagnoses on the pre-admission screen and the post-admission physician evaluation must agree. The diagnoses on the pre-admission screening and the post-admission physician evaluation must correspond with other information in the patient's medical record and generally will be the same. However, CMS says, there could be rare instances when the two sets of diagnoses could be different, reflecting significant changes in the patient's condition meeting between the pre-admission screen and the post-admission physician evaluation. The reason for these changes should be documented in the post-admission physician evaluation. So, to answer your question, yes, it is acceptable to select the IGC based on the new information in the PAPE that happens within 24 hours of admission. And for coding, we're required to go by what the physician states, but documentation should be appropriate to support it. So, one of the things that is a little confusing, and I don't know your program, but some programs, the physician sees the patient in the acute side, the IRF physician does before the patient comes to rehab, and there's a little bit of a heads up on what's going on, and it seems like the documentation is better about why the patient's coming into rehab. In other situations, the physician doesn't see the patient before they hit rehab. And, you know, so that first evaluation, if you will, and the physician laying their eyes on the patient is when they are in rehab, and that causes a little bit more challenge. So that's the reason for the PAPE to say, hey, I agree or disagree. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the PAS, it's completed before the admission happens, and the PAPE is completed within 24 hours of admission. So now, I've attached to today's episode a complete list of clarification documents from CMS, so you can go back and read this answer for yourself and see if there's anything else that kind of points to it. But yes, we're going to go based on the physician documentation, and I want to make myself clear, the physician doesn't have to state and nor that the IGC is 0.3.8, but he or she could, if the pre-admission screen identifies 3.8 or identified the diverticulitis rather than the critical illness myopathy, the physician should be clarifying that in his or her statement that the patient is being admitted for critical illness myopathy rather than the diverticulitis, and also, you know, if the IGC is stated and they know it and they want to say it, it's fine. It really, best practice should be clarified, but the PAPE will also support that as well. Okay, so long-winded question, long-winded answer. Hopefully that was helpful.
Thank you, Paula. Okay, so that one that I almost read you at the beginning, I'll just have to save that for next time because we've used up our time on this episode. But it's time for our mugging. So we have two non-anonymous questions. That is one from Jody and one from Linda, and I've got their names under my desk. So let's find out who's going to get a mug today. So today is Jody. Congratulations, Jody. I'll reach out to you and find out where to send your mug. If you would like to get a mug, be sure and send in a question, because that's the way you get one. Have your question read non-anonymously, and then I'm going to draw a name out of the hat from whoever had the non-anonymous questions on that episode. So we invite you over to aq-iq.com and look at the blue and white bar for the Ask Us tab and submit your question. You can also currently hear the previous episodes from that page. And we're just excited to have you today. Can't wait for the next one. Episode 85 will be coming along in 2 weeks.